Coming up on this week's show, I am talking with Matt Hepburn all about enterprise SEO. How does it differ from working with small brands? What are the challenges faced by big enterprise sites and big enterprise companies? And so much more coming up in this week's episode of Search with Candor. Hello and welcome to episode 1 of season 3 of Search with Candor. If you're watching us on YouTube or Spotify, hello, it's all video now. You can see our lovely faces as we continue this journey through the Search with Candor and expand into the video side of things of podcasting going forward. Get used to this. This is going to be happening for the rest of the year. I am, of course, your host, Jack Chambers Ward. I am the Marketing and Partnerships Manager here at Candor. Later on this month, I'll be joined by some fantastic guests, and we're kicking things off with the brand new season with the one and only Matt Hepburn from the EMJ SEO podcast. We're talking all about enterprise SEO, something I know a little bit about, but I have the majority of my experience working with smaller and medium-sized clients, so it was a really, really interesting conversation, so stay tuned for that, coming up after a word from our sponsors. The first sponsor for this week's episode is Also Ask. Go to alsoask.com. You probably might know it already since it was built by some of the team here at Candor. You may have heard of it through the fantastic Mark Williams-Cook and the development team who have built it. I take no credit for it, for the record, but I'm happy to talk about it because that's actually how I found out about Candor in the first place. Now, we've expanded recently. We're working on a lot of different updates and regular features and all that kind of stuff. And Also Ask actually now has quite a lot of different export options for your people also ask questions and answers. Not only can you get it exported to Google Sheets and Excel, you can get it as a CSV or an XLSS. A lot of different options to export the data you get from Also Asked, which, if you don't know, is the best and easiest way to bulk get data from Google directly from the SERPs themselves and the latest data for the People Also Ask section. So if you're looking at that People Also Ask questions and you're looking at the answers there, you can get them from multiple searches at a time, layers and layers deep, with a deep search also available. And yeah, you get a lot of different answers and questions from Also Asked. We also recently improved our speed. That's right. It takes less than 6 seconds on average to get a search from you typing in your main keyword query and getting a full breakdown of all the People Also Asked data. We have also expanded and you can now do API credits that do not expire if you are a pro user. So like I said, go to alsoask.com and sign up there. There are free options. There's a basic option and a pro option as well. Go and check them out at alsoask.com. Second sponsor for this week is Core Updates, a brand new SEO newsletter by the one and only Mark Williams-Cook. Yes, of LinkedIn fame, of unsolicited SEO tips fame, and my co-host here on the show on Search with Candor. You may already know Mark, you may already know his tips from LinkedIn and his appearances on the podcast, but you can get them straight to your inbox every single Monday. If you want to get solicited SEO tips, you want to get recommendations for articles you should be reading and the latest episode of this very podcast, you can go to coreupdates.com and sign up there. Like I said, it comes out every single Monday. And if you're listening to this or watching this on Monday, there is actually a referral scheme available and there are prizes, including simple things like getting a thank you on Mark's LinkedIn post. You can also get a copy of Majestic's SEO in 2024, which features me, by the way, and Carl McGregor's fantastic GA4 course, Mark's own Udemy SEO course, Sitebulb Pro, Mark Rove's digital PR course, Also Ask Pro and Lite subscriptions at different tiers as well. Loads of stuff. I am scratching the surface at the options here. So please do go to coreupdates.com and sign up there. And like I said, you get Mark's SEO tips delivered straight to your inbox every single Monday. And now, through a referral scheme, you can get loads and loads of prizes and nice SEO goodies to win as well. My guest for this week is the founder of EMJ Media, the EMJ SEO podcast, which, by the way, Mark Williams-Cook, our very own Mark Williams-Cook, was a guest on back in December. Also is the founder of Offer Fuel and the EMJ SEO Academy. He has over 14 years of experience in search engine marketing and over 9 years of experience in enterprise SEO, which just happens to be the topic of this week's episode, by the way. Welcome to the show, Matt Hepburn.
Jack, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me. I know we were just saying this before we started recording. I feel like you and I could just have a whole other hour of conversation. And we thought, wait, we better save this for the podcast.
Yes.
we were already getting deep into SEO topics and I was enjoying myself a bit too much. So we needed to actually press record.
Yeah, this is what happens when you have two podcasters chatting. So for sure,
it's a dangerous combination when you get two podcasters on the same call.
Yes, and who have the same background. For sure,
exactly. Yeah. So kicking things off, we're going to talk about enterprise SEO, and I know that is a pretty broad topic. I think that's something maybe some of the listeners have no idea what it is, and some listeners will be very familiar with. And I think we're going to kind of go deeper and deeper as we go through the topic, right? And it's something I have a tiny bit of experience with personally. I mostly have worked with small and medium businesses, kind of smaller brands and stuff, especially before I came at Canda. It was mostly sort of local SEO stuff and smaller stuff. So for the listeners who aren't familiar with enterprise SEO, and a little bit for myself as well, how do we define enterprise SEO? What is enterprise SEO to you, Matt, and your experience?
So it's elusive. If you were to look online, it might be talking about you know, how large the site is, but I don't really look at it that way. I look at it because I've worked for businesses that make 500 million that have 250 pages, right?
And the other way around as well.
and the other way around. So and then I've worked with for large, very, very large companies that have 16 business lines and different websites and all in different countries and international SEO. It's so the way I look about it is, or look at it is, you know, how much money are they bringing in? If they're bringing in a few million dollars, I would say they're transitioning from mid-size to enterprise. And if they're making, let's say, 75 million to 100 million, that's large enough for me for to classify them in enterprise. So there you go. And so the larger the company you get, the more complexity you get.
And yeah, that's something we've talked about a lot here at Canda, how we've grown over the last couple of years since I joined the company. I know Mark and the other directors have this plan to kind of like minimize the complexity. We're not going to grow to 100 team of 200 people or whatever. We want to kind of keep it fairly small. And I think that is a huge factor and something we're going to talk about later on is like the human side of it as well, right? How much organizations change as they grow, how much, you know, even thinking about it in SEO terms, like just the sheer amount of internal links and how many different people have to talk to different people in order to get stuff done and all the loopholes and all that kind of stuff is a huge factor into that, let alone the technical side of things and actually getting stuff done on the site. So I guess like, how would you say enterprise SEO is different to small, medium businesses and that kind of stuff as well? What are kind of the main differences in terms of the actual day-to-day work?
So it's funny. You know, one of the companies that I was at a few years ago, you know, it's one of those companies that probably had about, you know, 350 to 400 pages in posts. So I wouldn't say that they were huge, but they made over 500 million a year. For me, at the time that I was working there, I thought things were moving really slowly until I got to another company that had 16 business lines, had 50,000 employees, and made trillions of dollars.
Oh, wow.
And realized that the larger the enterprise organization, the more bureaucratic, lines you have to go through. And when you have multiple business lines that are competing for the same topic, right?
Yeah.
And when we're talking about topical clusters or anything like that. So now you have different websites within the brand competing for it. You're not able to get consensus as to who owns these topics. So now Google's seeing this across different websites and different audiences. And it becomes very hard to get things done. And there might be multiple IT teams. There might be IT teams associated with each website and different business lines. So, and then there's different budgets associated with each one of those, right? Or maybe there's a business line that's piggybacking off of another business line for IT because they don't have their own IT department. So they are a secondary citizen when it comes to getting their tasks done.
Yeah, I think that's a huge factor in like I said, the personnel side of things of just getting an understanding who needs to know what and when and how and who you answer to and who they answer to and all that kind of stuff is a factor whenever you're, you know, coming from an agency experience from my side here at Canda and my previous experience, like just an understanding, oh, the client contact is the marketing manager, But they answer to the marketing director, who then answers to the CEO or whatever it is like that. Understanding those structures then gets exponentially more complicated the more departments you have to work with. And then, like you said, budgets and stuff is a whole other thing. That's a whole other discussion.
it is. And the larger the business, the more complex it gets. So I guess where I was starting with saying the smaller company, which, you know, was smaller just by the size of the website. And yes, it made 500 million versus trillions, right? I realized I was agile when I was there, and I didn't realize it when I was there that I was agile, right? I felt things were moving slowly, but it's your experience, then you move on to something that's much slower. And your emphasis has to be different, because how can you make change happen as an SEO, right? So that is really kind of the conversation around enterprise, because there's challenges. So I'd love to go into like what are any of the questions, and we can dive into that. I don't want to ruin this question.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. Something we talk about a lot here at Canda is when, say, for example, we come in and help a site out from a technical audit perspective. They've got some serious indexing issues or crawling issues or whatever it is. They have some serious technical debt going on. And we kind of have that conversation of how do we prioritize this stuff, right? And you need to understand not only like how much of a difference is it going to make to the site and improve it, but also what are the resources required to that? Is that money? Is that time? Is that external developers? Is that internal developers? Is it they need to hire more people? Is there a whole other conversation that needs to be had there? And balancing those two and understanding it is something I think a lot of people kind of take for granted and like, well, this is the thing that will fix the website. It's like, right. But that will take 12 people an entire week to do, which means they can't do any other work, which means they drop everything. And suddenly the SEO of the website is the priority while the business is leaking money somewhere else or something like that, right? You understanding where the priorities have to lie and how other resources are used, when that's literally other people or money or investment or whatever it is, I think that's a huge factor that, as we're going to keep saying, it feels like gets more and more complicated the bigger the business gets, right?
I'm actually going to tag right into that. So think about a business that uses one type of CMS, right, for managing their website. So in this example, we'll call it Adobe Experience Manager, right? And let's talk about a business that has 20 different business lines. And they are all on a different instance of AEM. So what does that mean? So that means IT hasn't updated them to the same version of the software. So they all have different, and it all requires budget for them all to be synced up to the same version. And some of them have custom coding, some of them don't have custom coding within them. Right. So how does that work up? So are there things that the IT department has to do to sync up where it doesn't overwrite their custom code? So it just gets more complicated. The larger the and it's budget. It's all budget. Right. So when you're talking about getting things approved by marketing managers, think about let's say 3 to 4 marketing managers per each one of those business lines within the 20 businesses. So now we're talking about, let's say it's 3. So now we're talking about 60 marketing managers across that company that you have to actually work with. And they all are being told by somebody higher up what the content requirements are for that quarter, right? What content they're building. How that aligns, right? So SEO usually has, this is part of the biggest part that we have a problem with it. And I'm just going to jump into one of the things I suggested. We're not invited in to brainstorm on content. So when we're talking about topical clusters in SEO and how a business can be found as an authority, a topical authority for that, we then have to change that into how do we do this with technical SEO instead of doing that. So it's very much more of a custom crawl with something like Screaming Frog or Deep Crawl to find the topical relevancy across blog posts for that business line. And it's usually isolated into that business line. You can't go across to the other websites because there's different users or different audiences. And you will usually have marketing managers are screaming at you if you internally link across these boundaries. So, so this is another like, you know, almost semi-sacred thing that you can't internally link across into this other business line, because they'll say, well, how is the user going to find their way back to the area? Once they leave our area and go into your area, how are they going to find their way back to us? Right. There might not be some huge global navigation that tells them how to get back to there. But anyway, back to the point at hand, you can use something like Screaming Frog. Look at the H2 tags on whatever topically it is within your content. Your H2 tags, find the keywords around that. And then put in a custom search across those. If it's new content, if it's existing content, and find that within your blog content for that section of the site. Mm. And then you have to vet that manually. Does that make sense? Right. And depending upon the business, you might have to get permission to from compliance to do the internal links. Sometimes you don't. It's based upon the business. So,
yeah, I think that's a huge part of understanding how the interconnectedness of the various departments. For example, we had a client here at Canda where we went in and we had a big discussion with them, a multi, you know, international company, mm-hmm. with different language departments as well. So we had a conversation with them about consolidating essentially like all of your German speaking audience. Majority of them are from Germany, but you also have some from Austria and some from Switzerland and stuff like that. Do you necessarily need a separate site for the Swiss side of things, or are your offerings kind of unique to just German speaking people, or same for Portuguese people or Spanish speaking people? Is there a difference between what you're offering people in Spain to the people in South America who speak Spanish, and like, are there conscious difference there? And we're like, okay, there are some options here to consolidate. And they specifically asked us, can you come up with a solution that can consolidate and make something a bit simpler for us, so we're not managing 20 different domains and 15 different languages and all this kind of stuff? And we're like, cool, yeah, no problem. Did this thing, send it to them. And then all the departments went, well, we're not going to lose our website. Like, I'm not losing my subdomain. I don't want to lose my... The Austrian team went, well, just because the German people get their website, that means we should keep the Austrian one as well, right? And it was just internal politics as far as the eye could see. Nobody wanted to lose anything.
So I totally get it. So we are talking, when we're talking about that, and this is something we face a lot. So it's content syndication usually.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. So they take the one post, whoever the author is, and then they, let's just call it English language. So maybe there's 24, let's say, sites that are English language, and they republish that across that in the business. What enterprise businesses should do is make the conscious decision as to where this language is going to be the primary site for that English language, or no matter what language, what it is, where's the primary one that's going to show up in Google, and understand that they can still have their users find this content within their site and by email and other channels that they're going to send things out. But we have to make a conscious choice as to one place within Google that we're going to show up. And now we're going to no index the rest of that content for those other directories. We're also going to use Google Search Console and Bing Webmaster Tools to remove those pages out of indexing cache, so that when they're crawled again, they'll come back and they'll say, oh, the pages are no index. And it's going to be a much better experience for Google. Google will understand it. And the reason why we do this is that if you don't do that, what will end up happening is Google's going to pick and choose across this content, across these different folders as what it's going to index. And it's not going to be consistent. So you're going to have English content across all these different folders that you're going to have. In your example, I'm sure you had that. And then this is how we clean it up and have a much better and much easier way to show metrics within our analytics to prove what is happening with organic traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was such a huge factor, us thinking about syndication, and the opposite of that was the cannibalization, and you're then competing with yourself and essentially taking the food off your own plate to then spread yourself very thin and all that kind of stuff. And I think it was a huge discussion for us. And funny enough, we talked about a similar thing on the podcast. You mentioned the effort to make sure you pick essentially like a champion version of that content, right? And that is recommendations from Google that came through last year, talking about how if you're going to syndicate stuff, you kind of need to do that. Otherwise, we are going to kind of ignore all of your syndicated content. And I know a lot of big news sites do this, like Yahoo is pretty notorious for this. You'll get it on their various different subdomains. If you've ever gotten a backlink from Yahoo, you'll see it on cars.yahoo and auto.yahoo and all this various other finance.yahoo and all this kind of stuff. Their various different subdomains are then syndicated from the central news feed. And then you notice, oh, they're all no follow, no index. Oh, that's weird. And it totally makes sense. Like, you don't want to have that syndicated content, like you said, appearing in weird places, confusing users, and then also cannibalizing yourself. And I'm glad you mentioned talking about, you know, the indexing cache as well. I think that's something a lot of people just stick a no index tag and just leave it. Just don't worry about it. If it's already been cached, you're kind of already like two steps behind the problem, right?
So I think that's probably been the biggest part of my career, is cleaning up index and cache and making things, and actually also making things that are published, newly published, making sure that they're indexed. And as everybody knows, or maybe they don't, we have a limited amount of requests that you can do. It's about 10 pages that you can do for about 3 days of requesting within an index. And if you have multiple properties within Google Search Console and you switch to the other property, you're going to find out that you're still locked out from from indexing is something on that property as well. So,
yeah. I think that's such a huge part, because when you're thinking about specifically sites that are large with that kind of stuff and multiple sites, thinking about crawl budgets and indexation and stuff, that becomes such a bigger issue compared to much smaller sites, right? When you're thinking about the amount of pages, and especially when it comes to syndication, how much does that kind of go into your initial like competitive analysis, right? And thinking about how that, not only from an external point of view of like what other people are doing in the space, but how much of that syndicated content is not doing the right thing and not serving its purpose, as it were.
So for topical clusters, what I try to do is I try to make sure we have a hierarchical architecture. And if we don't have a hierarchical architecture, we're going to do the internal linking like we talked about before on a post. So as an example, if the post is, let's pick a topic for me, Jack, for a site.
Podcasting. Why not?
Okay. So you want to talk about podcasting. So if we had a big site on podcasting and maybe it was talking about podcast directories, right? And we wanted to internally link that, what I would do for a topical cluster is find on the site, because having the anchor text podcast directory, right, is very non-descriptive. Right. But it makes me think what the user would be searching for might be like, what is a podcast directory, or how can I use a podcast directory? So I would want to find the content on the site that was very early stage content around that. And I would use that as the hub to link from all these places from that to this place. So that's early stage and probably would make as most sense to the intent. But the other thing you can do is you can just go take that anchor text into Google in incognito and kind of see what type of searches are happening there to find the intent and see if it matches up with what you're thinking. And if it does, then you know you're kind of aligned to your opportunity. And then that can be, like I said, you might not have a hierarchical in URL structure or in your navigation, but you can think of your hierarchical in how you're organizing your site. So I always would recommend people use an Excel spreadsheet for this type of work, to say, I've done this work at this time, not just to cover your butt in reporting, but to be able to go back and go, oh, this is how I internally linked this 6 months ago to this post. And now you don't have to do tons of crawls to kind of figure out what you linked to. You still have to do a crawl to see like what's been updated across the site, but you have the majority of your architecture here. So
yeah, I think information architecture is such an important part of it, right? And understanding as much as we talk about like sitemax for indexing and all that kind of stuff, like and that's an important part of it. But actually, how users navigate is a huge part of that as well. I think establishing that hierarchy when it comes to having multiple sites talking about similar topics, or having a large single site, or however the site is set up, is a hugely important part of it. And I think that also applies to smaller businesses and smaller sites as well.
Yeah,
because you need a clear idea for how you kind of establish that customer journey, and whether that's directly purchasing something, whether it's e-commerce, or whether it's coming through for, you know, quotes and inquiries, or clicking a contact button, or trying to be a guest on a podcast in our example, or finding the podcast you're looking for, or whatever it is. That is such an important part of it. And it's something we talk about a lot with our clients here at Canada, is thinking about, imagine yourself as a customer, like taking that step back. And it's very hard, especially for someone like you, Matt, with so much years of experience. Take the SEO hat off for a second and think about the site without worrying about the H2s, without worrying about, oh, is this rendering correctly? Is the low speed? Like, you were a brand new user. I always, perhaps unfairly, use my wife as an example, because she does not know. She's a nurse. She has no idea about SEO. And when she noticed something on a website, I know something's gone wrong. Like, you take the kind of like technical hat off and think about it as a normal 99.9% of internet user kind of person. And it's like, oh, when you notice that the page is loading slowly, or when you notice that you can't get back to the parent category, or when, like you said, if you come in through a syndicated article and can't find your way back to the source, and you get frustrated, like, aha, there we go. That is the little nagging points, those little niggling points that you find just getting stuck in with having conversations with users, having conversations with customers. Speak to the sales teams if that's an option. Like, have that conversation, right?
Yeah, it is. And you're very much right. You know, it's very hard once you start getting to larger sites to ask for things to be put in navigation. especially if it's so what I try to do is I try to only ask for the I try to align to the KPIs of what the business has for the quarter or for the year, as to be able to say, what are the most important topics that you want to be found for or known for, right? And what tends to happen is I either get one or two of those links added to a footer navigation, usually not a global navigation, top level navigation, or in some cases, it's a banner for a new piece of content that in a section that links off to that content. And I have then worked with the editorial team to make sure that we have internal links to the most relevant content, or we're able to say related posts. Like, where do we have a related post topically across different things? And so it's usually one of those three ways, or a combination of those, that we're able to promote it. But on the enterprise side, it is really hard to do outside promotion, to get people to do anything to get extra links. In most cases, the idea of PR is a press release.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That is the idea of PR. It is not going and talking to a PR company and, or, you know, it's just not what I would do to actually promote an article.
Funnily enough, it's something we were talking about before we started recording, and I know it's something you have a lot of experience with. I've seen a lot more business owners like going on to podcasts and essentially, I guess it's the equivalent of guest posting, but in an audio format and in a bit less of a Google frowned upon transactional kind of way, more in a actually, you know, you're contributing content and stuff like that. And I've seen quite a few people where they will start their own podcast for that purpose, right? That company will start their internal kind of podcast and have, oh, we are now talking about this thing. We have this topic. And again, as we were talking about the diversification of media and stuff like that, and how I think that is hugely important, especially going forward, or what we're seeing in early 2024 in the SERPs and the changes we can expect in the next 6, 12, 18 months, whatever it's going to be. I think that's a huge factor of it. And not necessarily that's going to be an easier sell than hiring a digital PR agency or anything like that. But I think that is something that a lot of businesses could be doing to help kind of grow their awareness in a different way, right?
So I think that they need to do, so what we're talking about in that instance is talking about podcast guesting or being a guest on topically relevant podcasts. So I think a lot of people get this wrong. They become a guest on any podcast that will have them.
Yep.
versus understanding who is, which podcasts are topically relevant to them. If we're talking about topical clusters and linking back to your content, you want to have that. And you want to make sure that you have different questions that each time that link back to very specific content. But one of the tools that Candor has is the Also Ask tool, right? So if we think about it in this way, if we had content that we're looking to have links to that we're promoting as hey, please link to us within these podcasts, right? Maybe we've answered some questions there that were within also asked within the content. But what about all the other questions we haven't answered?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those should be questions that we are adding to our podcast, questions that we're giving to our hosts and making the questions kind of dynamic. And honestly, we can grow the podcast or grow the site from these type of links and just from referral traffic. But then you also want to think about to the host, like, do I have an asset, a lead magnet that I can give them that talks about this? And mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a PDF. It could be a video. Like, how many PDFs do you have on your hard drive? I have, right?
Thousands.
Right. Yeah. So if we think about PDFs, I'd only think about PDFs maybe as supplemental content for what I'm having. But maybe I have one or two videos that I can give them information right now that they can use and the PDF they can then download for it. But to get that those videos, they need to give me email address. Now I can get them into Nurture. And the Nurture e-sequence all has to be relevant topically to what we have here too. So think about 25, 26 emails that are all written that are topically relevant to what we're talking about as well.
Yeah, I think that's all part of that journey, right? Thinking about the buyer's journey from a slightly different perspective. And I know we were talking about SGE before we started recording as well, like that becoming such a big thing that is looming, the looming shadow over SEO throughout 2023 and now we're in 2024.
Do you want to talk about that? We can talk about that.
We can talk about SG if you want to, Matt. We can get deep in the dark depths of SG.
So one of the things that Google has given within their docs is that they've said that YouTube Shorts are going to be a big part of SGE experience. Yep. So we're already talking about also ask questions and having questions within your content. But a short is 30 to 60 seconds in YouTube. So if your channel was focused on one topic that you wanted to really be seen as a topical authority on your website for, if you took your content that you already have on your website and made shorts out of it in video, embedded them on your pages, you'd probably have better engagement on your pages. But Google recently came out with an algorithm twist on YouTube that said, if you embed, you're not going to really rank now in the SERPs for that. It's all going to be around your channel. I think that was about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But it still means you'll have better engagement on that page if people are watching the video as well, right? And you're giving people multiple ways to engage with that video. But the more we add to our YouTube channel in Shorts, right? The better chances we have of showing up in SGE to answer those questions. So, and if we have them embedded on our page, maybe we're also linking up to that. Now we're doing an internal link or cross-channel link over to our YouTube short. And that could help boost that as well. So,
yeah, definitely. I think that's a huge factor that I think a lot of people need to be thinking about when it comes to creating content in 2024 and repurposing content as well, right? That's a huge part of it as well. Spinning back round to enterprise SEO, we talked about SGE, we mentioned that, and yep. One of the questions you brought I thought was really interesting, something I hadn't really thought about, was how businesses use their own abbreviations and internal terms and nomenclature kind of stuff, right? And how does that hurt their SEO efforts? I've experienced it where companies have built a new tool or a new sub tool or whatever it is, like a part of their service that they offer. And I'm like, you didn't Google those three letters, did you, before you didn't think to type that in and think it might be something that is very not safe for work or very inappropriate or something that is completely irrelevant to your thing or a global brand that has already got those three letters that you don't stand a chance against. From your experience, how much does that factor into enterprise SEO?
it's very prevalent because you have writers who just write things. There's this especially in certain industries. So I'd say financial, it's really big. They just have these abbreviations for what they have, or they have these funds that they have and they're writing content on it, but that's not what people are searching for. So if you're brought in, so we were saying before, when are we brought in? So we're not brought in to typically in enterprise when content ideation is happening. That actually happens usually from leadership. It's not the marketing managers. It's some form of leadership that's actually saying, these are the topics we're going to focus on. So it comes down to the marketing managers, and then it's budget-wise requirements as to what they're having, and they then assign it out to writers. Sometimes, depending upon the company, you and how far you've integrated into the process, you might be able to give them feedback on keyword research to say, hey, here's actually the intent of the keyword, here are some subtopics, go take this and write this holistically. I'm not telling you what to write, but do that.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes. But sometimes, and most of the time with most enterprise sites, is the content's written, it might even be pub. And then you're brought in afterwards to tweak things. So in the instance where you're brought in last minute before it's published, you then have to, you have to do the work. You're double checking first the intent in Google, like you were talking about, to see, does this make sense? And a lot of times, there's nobody does that except for the SEOs. And so they don't understand what they're doing. They're writing based upon the nomenclature that they're used to, right? They don't understand that it can show up for a different business, that can show up completely for a different term, or that the term that they're actually optimizing for is not within the buyer's journey. It's a scholarly article or something like that, right? So typically it's they may not be that far off, right? A lot of times, but it's not what people are looking for. If they're expecting this to be further on in the buyer's journey, and then when we talk about the buyer's journey, we're talking usually early stage awareness. Then we're talking about consideration, and the consideration is to say, "Hey, be on the list to possibly buy this product or service," and that's transitioning into product pages and service pages. And then once they've purchased those product pages, service pages, once they've purchased that, then kind of like the awareness afterwards, the customer support for when they've come back to say, well, why did I buy this? I don't remember why I bought this. So a lot of different types of content within there, and they're not writing content based, they have a, most enterprise businesses have a linear idea of what the buyer's journey is, and they base it off of personas. And they usually only write from the perspective of, here are product pages, here are service pages, and here's customer support content. That's all they write about. So it's very rare that they write anything early stage. Some businesses have case studies and testimonials, which actually help support different stages of the buyer's journey. But it's usually a lot of pounding on the chest and it's not, and saying why they're the best thing since sliced bread. So what I like in the buyer's journey is I like a company to be able to say, here are the fears and challenges and the issues that you're facing. Here is how this product solves these issues, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And let that content then be the hero. They don't have to pound their chest because the content then that allows, and it's usually earlier stage. So that allows the person to say, the user in Google or in Bing to go, this company gets me. They understand my problem, issue, or challenge and my fears. And I'm feeling confident to move them along in the buyer's journey in my head to put them on a list to say, I'm going to add them as to a list of consideration that I might use this product or service along with the other 7 or 10 other products or services that I'm looking at, right? So it's very much in their head. It's not written down anywhere in most cases, unless it's a buying committee. but, you know, so that to me is the problem with, that got really deep. Sorry.
Oh, it's, well, absolutely. That's why we're here. We want to get deep. We want to talk about it, right? And I think that is a big thing a lot of people take for granted. Like you said, the linear buyer's journey is not, I think, a realistic estimation of how people browse in 2024. That's not a realistic idea of how, I don't know, a lot of people talk about like, oh, so many young people go to TikTok first and stuff like that. If your audience is younger, you need to think about being where your audience is and how to factor that in. And TikTok might be right for your business, or that is completely not right for your audience. And I know a lot of people will just jump on the next trend and be like, okay, let's now this marketing manager shifts towards this thing or whatever, and be like, well, we need to be on TikTok because that's the cool new thing. Like, right, you're a tool for finance people. You do not need to be on TikTok necessarily, unless you've seen that there is something there. And I think there's a factor there where so many people kind of want to just have a very clear awareness. Oh, they think about the product, they buy the product, then it's customer service. Like, that is not how you go off and research. And Google has talked so much about the importance of like the pros and cons and the extra E that they added to EEAT, right? So we now have the first-hand experience side of things. You need to talk about and get people to talk about their first-hand experience with your products and services and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's something a lot of people are obviously still catching up with and still thinking about, but something that we all need to be factoring in more is understanding realistic customer journeys, not the idealized perfect, here is the funnel and everyone funnels down and everyone purchases, hooray, we have 1 million customers. It's not that simple.
It's not. And Gartner's had their, maybe for 6 or 8 years, buyer's journey, little snapshot on there, and it's very chaotic. And I think probably 6 years ago, they were saying it's 66 to 70% of users in the buyer's journey, especially for, you know, B2B and enterprise level, they don't want to talk to a sales rep for 67 to 70% of their journey.
Yep.
They want to, they want to do all their research themselves. And so this means across channels. This means, paid, organic, you know, all that type of stuff. They want to have it. And this really means that if your website doesn't cover the full spectrum of the buyer's journey on it within content for topically, that you are, as a company, losing out.
Yep.
And that means that's enterprise, that's small business, that's every business. So what does that mean? So it really means that your business should be seen as a topical authority. So what do you have to do to become a topical authority? You better write in depth and breadth about the topic that you're writing about and your experience within it, right? How does your product and your service help with that? Case studies, testimonials, whatever you can get from that. And most companies just don't do this. So
yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that Google talks about with the almost like the transparency, the, not to coin a phrase, but the candor of the whole thing, the candidness, we're called that for a reason, folks listening at home, that the whole idea that, you know, being open and honest with your customers and having the pros and cons of like, our thing does this really well, but actually it doesn't do this thing as well. And being honest about what it does and doesn't do.
Love that.
It is an important part of it. And Google used the term pros and cons. So you need to, like you said, not just beating your chest and saying, we're the best. Our thing is the only thing you'll ever need ever again. It will solve all your problems. It will fix your marriage. It will make all the money. It will do everything possible. Like, you need to be honest about what your services, what your products actually do. Like, the perfect example you summed up there, like, what problem are they going to solve? That is the key drilling down to the factor of the whole thing, right? Like, what is my problem and how does this solve it? But is it trying to fix every single problem and it's just sounding like the best thing ever? And maybe it's just because I'm cynical and very British, but I don't trust a business that is just like, oh yeah, we're the best. We're just, you know, 100% the best thing and you will never need anything else. We're an all-in-one blah, blah, blah platform. Like, are you though? Because it sounds like you started off as one of those things and then grew into a bunch of stuff you don't actually understand. Yeah. And then, ta-da, we're an all-in-one platform now. Like, I'm hugely cynical. Maybe that's just me, but I think that is a factor. You know, you need to talk about, sing when you're winning, talk about the things you are good at as a business, what your products are good at and all that kind of stuff, but also be honest about what it doesn't do. And I've seen some really good examples. I had John Uozor, who was a writer for Forbes and their tech blog specifically, talking about how important their pros and cons stuff is from the Forbes content hub side of things and their knowledge hub and understanding how all of the writers have to have firsthand experience with this software, compare it to other software and say like, oh yeah, using podcasting example, we were talking about various things before we started recording. We were nerding out about podcast recording stuff. So StreamYard versus Riverside versus Descript versus Zoom versus Skype and all this kind of stuff. Like, understanding if you're working at StreamYard, it does this better than Descript or Zoom, but actually it's not as good audio quality. It's not as good video quality, but it makes up for that in the fact that it connects to YouTube or connects to LinkedIn. So it's solving a specific problem rather than trying to fix all of the problems at once and not actually doing anything to the fullest extent, if that makes sense.
No, it's and so this is a problem with enterprise, right? So usually they have too many topical clusters that are going on and they're not being known for one or two specific things. And like we said before, they're, you know, you have cross business lines, they are competing for those topics as well. So I would rather be able to have all my content underneath for a topical authority on a site in one hierarchical area where I can find it as a business. We were also saying, like, how do you get back to a section if you want from one? So it makes so much more sense for SEO and makes more sense for businesses, but they're not. When we think about businesses and we think about enterprise, I think when I first started getting into enterprise, I thought they would be so much, have their stuff together, right?
They're big companies. They must know what they're doing.
They must know what they're doing. Yes. Yeah. And while they do know how to run a business really well and to generate revenue, that does not mean that they know the digital marketing side gets much more complex and one side doesn't talk to the other. So just, you know, I realized, you know, okay, on the content, on the SEO content writing side, where we want to rank content to be a topical authority, small businesses and mid-sized businesses have it much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They just do. Because you can be part of the SEO strategy or content strategy to say, here's a topical cluster. This is around your topics and your, around the fears and the challenges for the users. You can make that strategy with the business, create really in-depth content that's internally linked. And then, you know, it really show up as a hero. And the newest thing that I'm seeing work really well is instead of using for PPC, instead of using no index pages, using these nice topical hubs, Instead of linking down to one page, right? Now you link down topically to the relevant page and your quality scores are going up much higher. So instead of having a quality score of 3 or 4 from trying to put all keywords onto one landing page, now it's topically relevant. Your scores are going up to maybe 7 to 9 if it's really good content, which means your cost per click is going down. And this also helps the engagement on the site, on the page. So it actually helps spur the SEO because you're increasing your engagement on the page. So
that is something I think a lot of people, again, we think about it from a organic perspective of coming in through a specific question, but I think you're totally right. It ties into PPC as well, right? Having a super specific landing page that answers that specific question and has super focused targeting for that particular user, for that particular query. It makes a huge difference. I have experienced it plenty of times where I've landed on a hub page for a thing. Mm-hmm. And I actually want a very specific answer to a very specific question, but I've landed on the parent topic and I'm like, oh, God. I mean, I don't know anything about this. That's why I'm searching the question in the first place. Like,
that's right.
Where do I go from here? Give me the answer. And then maybe if I want to then explore further and go broader, you want to land specifically and then go broader, right? And have that kind of natural, and that ties back around to what we were saying about navigation earlier, right? The importance of the ability to, even if you land on a piece of syndicated content that is incredibly specific and relevant to your question, you need to then give the users the option to travel around and convert in different ways and reach around the site and find their way around. Because I've experienced where, you know, you land on, I'm doing competitor analysis for a client of ours recently, and I was looking at the kind of content the competitors are creating. And there were just no internal links whatsoever in any of the content, whether it was they had product images in the content, they had, you know, saying the names of their products in the actual content. And I was like, "Why you've said the word, I don't know, you've said the word fire extinguisher. Why aren't you linking to your fire extinguisher like category page or your product page or whatever it is?" And they just didn't. I was like, I find that fascinating. And I found another example. This was kind of in more like the medical field and stuff like that, where they use an almost academic style of like citation style internal linking, where they had a superscript 1, superscript 2, little things after each thing, and then just a absolute wall of text of internal links at the bottom. It looked like a academic journal or a Wikipedia article or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like,
horrible.
This is a really, I can barely find that tiny little thing to click on in the first place. Make the whole thing much bigger and you use the full anchor text. It's a much more clickable link, and I'm trying to click on this tiny little 3 just in the corner there, and I was like, this is a terrible idea. And then it just wasn't, that was a jump link down to the actual external link at the bottom or the internal link at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a horrible experience. This is terrible. And having, like we were saying before, having that clear hierarchy and that clear structure allowing users to navigate can make a huge difference. And I think this is something we'll kind of wrap up on, is talking about another big topic is conversions, right? getting conversions from content and all that kind of stuff. And I know this is a big topic in enterprise SEO as well, right? So from your experience, how have you found, you know, organic conversions and growing that with your clients and with other businesses?
So the biggest issue with enterprise of what they ignore is typically they do not link any of their blog posts to a product or service page. And depending upon the industry, they might be actually limited to being able to do that, right? So they might not be able to mention the product or you know, especially in finance, you know, they're very limited to what they could do via compliance. Yeah. So here's the thing. So maybe they're not doing it to a product page, but they could have a top level funnel page that, you know, is might be what we would call a silo that has all the important topics that's linked off of that page that they could do internal links on. There's so many things they could do. And they don't have, they don't use buttons a lot on their blog posts. So it's just internal links. There's no focal point. There's no call to, like, strong call to action to be able to use this. So this is a huge opportunity that they could take advantage of. That they don't. So I'd say that is part of the problem. And I've gone down a rabbit hole, so I forgot the initial question.
Talk about conversions and organic.
Yeah, so for conversions, like, so
I think that's a huge thing, right?
Yeah. So here's the other thing. So with organic, there. So I have worked with some companies that have, you know, with organic, it's not as easy to track conversions depending upon how many things you're tying into your business. Just having analytics to say that you're, you know, you had a form conversion or this or that, yes, you can convert from there. But really what you want with most businesses that are enterprise level is it's deeper. It's gone to Salesforce. It's gone to some CRM yeah. that shows where they've converted. And that's actually where you need the conversion to then jump to. So I've had some organizations that I've worked with that have diligently worked to create that and we're able to say with last touch or first touch, whatever, this is how much organic can, you know, contributed. And, but I've had plenty of other ones that did not do that at all. So, the other thing that you also have as a problem with enterprise is analytics. So yeah. depending upon, so I'm going to say this without mentioning the company. So they're one of the companies that I worked for, you know, just grew organically so that with the different business lines. So they kept on having analytics, you know, added to different here and there and here and there, and it wasn't cross channel. So what you end up happening is, even though it might be the site or the subdomain, it's all these analytics are not connected because they're different business lines within there. Yeah. So you might have somebody who's driving traffic from the homepage of the main site and they want to go over to the partner site, let's say. And they've driven paid traffic to this page on the main site. Now what ends up happening is you can track that traffic there. But you have to jump to a new analytics dashboard to be able to say, now I have traffic coming in here. Where is it coming from? And now, okay, how are we converting that traffic? Or do we have a form completion? Or what are we doing to be able to track that? So you're tracking across different analytics channels. It's not done efficiently.
Yeah, so. I think that's a huge issue with a lot of when we're thinking about it, like just getting, I hate to say those three words, but GA4 set up on a site can be enough of a hassle as it is, let alone, like you said, when
it was universal analytics too, though, man. It's just, when did they set it up? Oh, they set this one up 5 years ago. They set this one up 2 months ago and nobody talked to the IT teams to like...
Typical. Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for joining me, Matt. I feel like I've learned a lot about enterprise SEO. I think it's been a really interesting conversation. And like I said, it's something I've not had much experience about myself. So it was really cool to kind of pick your brain and talk about your experience over the last decade of enterprise SEO stuff and think about things on a scale I don't often have to think about, which is quite nice.
Yeah. You know, it's you can still be agile doing this. You just have to you're picking and choosing it. You might not be doing it with the content, so you have to find like the technical way that you can actually make KPIs and year over year or quarter over quarter increases. So it's just finding that, and it's a lot of cross channel conversations with different teams and opening up those channels. Find success with one channel or one team, and then all of a sudden, you know, 6 months later, you've got other teams coming. Hey, I heard how you had success with that, and now it starts opening up. So that's the important part.
That's the key, right? Getting your foot in the door and building those relationships and stuff. Because, I know we talked about it before. Like it sounds so simple, right? But that is such a key part of it.
So your customers in enterprise are actually your coworkers. That's the difference. So you just got to think about, instead of saying customers as working at agency where it's a website and maybe a CMO or CTO, it's actually all these other marketing managers and the other people you're working across team with. So
amazing. Well, thank you so much for dropping some knowledge and educating us all and informing us all about enterprise SEO.
I loved it. It's awesome.
How can the listeners follow you on social media, follow your podcast as well, and your journey into podcasting? I know you're planning to do some big changes coming up, like we've been doing for this season. So a fellow podcast as well. How can people follow you? Where's the best place to find you around the internet?
So my podcast is EMJ SEO Podcast, but if you go to the website, it's emjpodcast.com, or you can find us on your podcast channel of choice, whatever it is. You can sign up on all of those. Would love for anybody to come and listen. And, you know, our changes this year are we're trying to get away from maybe the 45 minute to hour interviews that we constantly do. We feel like we're not providing enough of a strategy for the user. So we're still going to have interviews. We love interviews, but we want to have a lot more strategy that are short term, 10, 15 minutes, that very simple things of what they can do. So we were talking about indexing before. Maybe we'll, you know, probably start with some indexing things of what they can do and how they can help their site out. And we're going to give it to them as a framework this year. So how they can implement it. And then, you know, of course, we have our agency platform, which is offerfuel.io for any enterprise businesses who are looking for SEO consulting. But those are few and far between, but we'd love to talk to them anyway. So.
Awesome. Well, everybody, the links for those will be in the description on YouTube or the show notes on the podcast app of your choice, as you mentioned earlier, Matt. So please do go and check those links down below, and you can go and follow Matt, follow the EMJ podcast. And if you're into enterprise SEO and want to get somebody to consult on your SEO, Matt's the person to speak to. So go and check out OfferFuel as well.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to sit down and have a conversation. It's nice to listen to your podcast and then have you as a guest on my podcast. It's very cool to finally sit down and have a conversation.
All right, man. And you guys have the best tools, so love that.
I'll pass the message on to Mark and the team. Thank you so much. Yes.
Awesome.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, cheers. Thanks. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening or watching, because you can watch us now on YouTube and on Spotify. That's right, Spotify does video podcasts as well. Let us know what you think of the new format of video. We're here on YouTube. We're going to be doing a lot more video content going forward throughout the season, and I'm going to have some fantastic guests coming up throughout the year. Lots of brand new guests, potentially some returning guests as well. Now we have the new format. You might see them in person in the studio. You might see them remotely as well. But yeah, let me know what you think of this kicking off episode of season 3. Please stay tuned for all the cool stuff we've got coming up throughout the rest of the year, throughout the rest of the season. And until next week, thank you so much for listening and have a lovely week.